G'day, this is Gregory James, author of Border Town. You're listening to David Temple on Naked Monday.
Perfection.
You like my radio voice?
I do.
Not quite Russell Crowe, but you know.
Whether you're an avid reader or a daily writer, Naked Monday with David Temple. Real conversations.
Oh, nice mustache.
How do you like that?
That's not bad. It's, yes, it's handlebar mustaches. They're coming back.
It's a little bit porno, isn't it?
Well, maybe, yeah. It's a bit 70s porno, maybe. But look, hey, you're a very handsome man, David.
Oh, Gregory, good to see you, dude. You look great.
Great. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I'm slightly lighter than I was when I met you.
Yeah. I noticed. I think I went on your Instagram, and I'm like, whoa, he dropped a couple of lbs.
Yep, I did, yes.
Or kilograms, I guess, in your world, right?
KGs, yeah.
KGs. Right. You got some KGs. Yes. I am with Gregory James. He has parlayed a 20-year career as an Australian police detective into a full-time writer. Please welcome Gregory James. Hey there.
Thanks, David. It's great to see you again, and it's great to be here on your show.
Gregory, we met, it was Thriller Fest 2019, right?
19, that's right, yeah.
And I'm telling you something, this first Thriller Fest I had gone to, and we just struck up a conversation over a couple of pints in the bar, and you know, you're one of those guys that you meet, you start talking to, you're just like, I feel like I've known you my whole life. So it was only natural, however delayed, in us finally getting together, but it's good to see you again.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, and the same for me. You know, you're one of those guys, are very charismatic, I guess. It's funny, you know, being an Australian in a big city like New York, you get picked out quite quickly, of course, because of your accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had some good yarns, and you know, it's good to catch up again.
Yeah. I do want to say out of the gate, I was pitching a book when I was out there at Thriller Fest, which was my latest detective story, The Poser. It was under a different name then. And since then, I'm in the middle of the sequel, which is The Imposter. And for whatever reason, I chose Australia for the guy who, let's see, how do we do it without giving away? So now he is in Australia.
Yeah.
And dude, I have been researching the hootenanny out of Australia, and I don't know why, I'm just flat out fascinated by it. Just fascinated by the country. It's beautiful. I had no idea it was so beautiful.
Well, thank you on behalf of all us Aussies, I guess, Dave, but you've never been here, have you?
I never been there. I have, but I'm telling you something. I've been researching Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. It is Brisbane, right?
Brisbane, that's right.
And Gold Coast, because it is surfer haven, right? Surfer heaven.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't really spent much time on the western part of the country, which is where you're from, correct?
I'm from Queensland. Brisbane is Queensland, and the Gold Coast.
Okay. State. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. Gold Coast.
I'm on the eastern side, yeah.
Got it. So if I were to, and see if I'm right here, because it helps me put it into perspective. So Melbourne, to me, looking at the downtown historical aspect, it feels like New York or Chicago to me, while Sydney feels a little more like Los Angeles-ish. And then Gold Coast, Brisbane is more kind of like Miami, Florida. Is that any, am I close?
I haven't been to many places in America, of course, so it's hard to comment, but I think that's pretty good. I mean, Queensland, Gold Coast and Brisbane, where I'm from, is a sunny state, very much like Florida, probably a lot like California, really.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good surfing, you know, Great Barrier Reef, beautiful islands, you know, tropic weather. That sort of thing. Plus the outback, all in one state. Of course, our states over here are much bigger than your states. We only have 7 of them, so they're quite large. But that's a pretty good, accurate description, yeah.
All right. So I am curious. Are you a surfer?
I'm not.
Okay.
No. So I can't comment about any surfing topics we may talk about, which is strange being from Queensland because it is a big surfing area here as well.
Yeah. I would love to impress you by saying, we live in Encinitas, which is just outside San Diego, and San Diego is famous for surfing. Not quite perhaps as Gold Coast, but it is gorgeous. And I have, I can't imagine myself ever getting on a surfboard, quite frankly, but.
Yeah, okay.
So you are writing full time.
No, that's, no, unfortunately. Look, Dave, you know, like after I released Border Town, I couldn't put a lot of time into its marketing. I didn't, I was there pitching at Thriller Fest like you as well. I didn't get any take up on that. You know, I'm still trying. I mean, obviously things have happened, some personal things have happened.
Sure.
And that has made a big impact on me being able to move on to the next book and promote Border Town as well. So I'm a little bit behind you. Yes, I'm working on book two, same character. It's been difficult. You know, I've got to pay the bills as well. You know, so I have I work for myself, and writing's very difficult to fit into that, but I'm trying. It's all you can do.
So as a former cop, a detective, do you get to dabble in that again? Did you have to retire, or do you simply perhaps consult?
I retired from the police force, and I'm now a private investigator, but you will think, you know, I don't typically do what you think private investigators do, but that's what I do, and that's my business.
Okay.
But I do the more corporate stuff. I don't, you know, I'm not following around cheating husbands or wives or hiding in any bushes in trench coats, driving a red Ferrari with a mustache like yours.
Yeah. with a long lens less, in the bushes, right?
Yes. Very much less glamorous than that. I'm sort of in the more corporate world. So I'm helping organizations with, you know, things like bullying, harassment, and workplace sort of matters as well. That's where the bulk of my work is.
Let me ask you this. Does the mechanics, if that's the right word, of private detective work in corporate world, do they share similarities with the trench coat wearing in the bushes guy?
Well, you know, there's two types of private investigation. One is called surveillance. They're the people. There's plenty of them out there. They do that sort of stuff, you know, and then there's called what factual investigators, which is, you know, they interview people, they gather evidence, they analyze things. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. I don't do any, I'm no good at surveillance, unfortunately, David. I get picked out too much of the cop. And I go to pubs and have a drink and going to get some drunken guy come up to me and say, are you a cop?
Do you get that? Do you get that actually?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I still get that now. You know, I could be out with another mate having a few beers in a pub, and we'll get someone comes up to us who's been looking at us for a while and go, you guys cops, you know, like sort of, no, we're not, but we were, of course. But I guess I think all cops have that certain look. They carry those certain traits, whether they like it or not, from being in the police force. I don't know what it is exactly. I can't pinpoint it.
Ah, that is really intriguing to me, because I would not, having met you there in New York, I wouldn't have guessed that. And looking at you, I don't know what that thing is, unless you were, I suppose, if you were wearing a sport coat with a piece underneath it and you were constantly scanning the room and you're sitting in the corner with your back to the corner, you know, maybe I would put all that together.
Yeah. 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 I think cops carry themselves differently. You know, they stand off people when they talk. It's all professional sort of distance stuff. You know, they can stand a certain way, which is all cop stuff, when they have their guns and what hip they have them on and all this sort of stuff. So I can typically pick who I think are cops. And I guess, you know, most crooks, we call crooks, baddies, criminals, whatever you want to call them, they're pretty good at it too, you know. So that's because that's their livelihood. Stay away from the cops. So they're pretty good at it too. So
that's funny to me. Well, let's go back a little ways then. How old were you when you decided that you wanted to be a cop? I'm always curious about that.
Well, you know, probably late teens, I would say.
Okay.
It wasn't something I was particularly interested in. I went to university and did a business degree for some reason. I'm not sure why I did that, but anyway, I did it and I finished it. And then I decided, you know, I think there's something more exciting out there. So, I joined and I left my hometown and went about 2,000 kilometres. I'm not sure how many miles that is, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
To the academy in another state and joined and spent, you know, a couple of decades down there. I'm back home now in my state, which is good.
What did I read? Hold on a second. He embarked on a career as a cop after deciding a business degree didn't provide the appropriate stimulation. That's off your bio. I like that.
Well, you know, sitting in an office is good, and I enjoy it now. That's what I do now, but
sure.
Interview people and that sort of stuff. But, you know, being a cop, you know, it's a rewarding career. It's got a shelf life, being in law enforcement. You know, you see lots of horrible things. You meet lots of wonderful people. You meet an equal amount of not so wonderful people too. So it was good. I enjoyed it. It took its toll on me in the end. And I had to get out for the sake of, you know, my health and my family as well. So
this is a good question. Do you mind sharing why that took a toll? And the reason I asked that, my wife and I, Tammy, were just watching Night Stalker, the documentary on the Night Stalker last night. You really get to know the detectives behind it. And it did. It practically ruined their lives. How does that happen?
Yeah. I don't know. I think, David, you know, it's part an individual thing. You know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I take on a lot of emotions. You know, the other thing too, and I was listening to your podcast yesterday with the last fellow, Frank.
Frank Zaffiro, yeah.
He said a lot of really interesting things that resonated with me, you know, about being a detective and that sort of stuff. And it is different being a detective to being a patrol officer, you know. And he, you know, what he said was really true. You know, you carry a lot of that stuff with you. When you're a detective, you carry these cases with you sometimes for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, and you're dealing with the emotions of, you know, the family of maybe somebody who's been murdered and you can't solve it. And that's what took its toll on me. Seeing all the dead bodies and in people who have killed themselves and murders, that doesn't bother me. It's the emotion that goes along with all that, that, you know, builds up in someone over a long period of time.
He was a good interview and he had some great insights. We've become pretty good pals since then. I think the thing that would bother me the most is because I'm what does my wife call me? She goes, you're a heart guy. You're a touchy feely heart guy. So when I meet people, I kind of absorb their energy. I don't try to do it, but I absorb their energy. And if you're a wicked person, I feel it. And I would imagine being around that would be pretty tough over time.
It can be, you know, dealing with, you know, people who commit offenses against children and those sort of things.
Yeah.
That can be really rough emotionally.
That's what bothers me the most. When I was reading what the Night Stalker had done, and I was like, wow, you got to be a sick young person to get into something. And that begs my question, and we'll get off of this in a second, but like what... Because we're all voyeurs, what was like one of the stickiest or scariest situations you've been in? Just something that you did that you like, when you got out of it, you went, wow, that was pretty creepy and or dangerous, and I hope to never be there again. Can you think of?
Oh, you know, it's hard, Dave, because there's been so many, but I'm certainly, it's not dramatic, you know. I know law enforcement in the US is under a lot of pressure now. But they're really faced, and you know, we don't have the guns here that you have there either. So,
oh, you don't?
That there aren't guns here? No. Yeah, a short background in the late, I think it was the late 90s. We had a massacre, which a fellow in a state called Tasmania murdered 35 people with an automatic gun, and our gun laws changed after that, so you can't have automatic guns now.
Oh,
so you can't kill 35 people in one go. And still get a gun and kill someone,
right?
Just not 35 of them,
right?
So we haven't. I don't think we've had a mass shooting here in this country since then.
Wow.
Now I'm not suggesting that will ever happen in America, but we're not faced with, when we pull over a car, someone may have a gun. Typically, of course, they may. I guess in the US, it's probably more common that they may have. So, look, I had lots of scary situations. It's hard to pinpoint one. You know, I've had someone try and stab me. I've never shot anyone, thank God, you know. I've never had to. I've almost had to a few times. I've sort of been shot at from a distance a few times. And, you know, you're out in the bush and, you know, you go to brawls of 200-300 people throwing things at you.
Yeah.
There's lots of – every cop goes through this, you know, every cop. quick story. In 2000, I went to your beautiful country and went to Denver, Colorado.
Oh, yeah, we love
and
it.
And went up into the mountains to a place called Breckenridge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was there for a conference. It was an armed robbery conference of, you know, people all over. I met some wonderful people. They really looked after us. And we spent a few shifts with the Denver PD riding along with them. And you know what struck me the most is that it's no different being a cop there than it is here. Same shit, different accents.
Got it. Mm. Got it. That's good to know. That's enlightening. However, just a gun difference, because everyone here, I mean, I've got friends in Canada, for instance, and we had a conversation one day about, I was talking about a couple of different guns I had, and they said, what, you have a gun? We don't have guns here. How do you have guns? What is that all about? And I'm like, everybody has guns, don't they? I mean,
whether you believe in that or not, I guess, you know, it's one of those things here. I know it's your constitutional right to, sure, to have that. And, I'm not going to comment about that. It's just that we don't have that sort of issue here.
Right.
I'm thankful for, yeah.
Yeah.
I was certainly thankful for it as a policeman.
I want to go off on this tangent on Border Town. I will have to say, I did need a bit of a glossary with me, because you have phrases that I'm not familiar with. Now, I did, but when I was reading this book, I would make little notes to myself, and I go, okay, go look that up. And then I keep reading. I'm like, whoa, okay, what is that? And that's one of the things that it made me go slower, but it's an intriguing book. And what I want to say, it's called Border Town, A Broken Man's Odyssey, A Broken Community's Only Hope. How much of your past career, I'm assuming a whole lot, plays into this book and your ability to translate what you do as a living into it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. My character, Beau Campbell, is a young detective who gets transferred out into a really remote station. And the reason he does that is because he accidentally killed his partner in a bungled drug raid, so they're trying to get rid of him. Look, that never happened to me. But I like to write my stories, you know, I call them faction. So the book is fiction, of course, and what happens to Beau along the way is... there's a lot happens to him.
Sure.
But the procedural stuff, you know, I have an advantage, obviously, from knowing how cops work, you know. I remember one reader once telling me, oh, you know, your Beau's driving along to his station drinking beer in his car as he's going. That's a bit outrageous, isn't it? Like, I went, not in the 80s. In the 80s, you know, all cops drank beer on duty, into the 90s even.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, everything is really based on, you know, certainly the procedural stuff of being a cop is I think pretty spot on.
Does it drive you crazy when you're reading a book and someone is writing some detective work and you can just tell, oh, you haven't really been a detective? Does that bother you?
Oh, look, it doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, Michael Connelly never been a detective, has he? But I certainly like his books, but I'm sure he's spent plenty of time with them. All I'd say, if you're going to write a detective story, try and spend some time with them if you can. If not, talk to them. They're all, you know, they're pretty willing to give over their secrets.
I have to admit, and I am guilty as charged, Your Honor, and Michael Connelly is a great example, because my detective Norelli borrows a lot from Michael Connelly's Harry Bosch. And
Bosch, yeah.
Now with you in my friendship pool and Frank Safiro, I feel like I have two great consultants that I can talk to, because I spend a whole lot of my time, especially this past year, right in this little quadrant, and I don't get out that much. But I do want to spend time with the detective, and I like the fact that you have encouraged me and other writers to say, yeah, spend some time, ask them. All I can do is say no, and
that's right.
Add a flavor of authenticity to it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, if you're a writer and you approach, you got to find the right one. Yeah. Detectives are people. There's some good ones. There's some not good ones.
Sure.
You know, you'll find one probably that in your local area that'll say, yeah, come out on a ride with me one day. You know, like you just got to keep trying. I think it's important. I mean, you can watch all the TV shows and stuff. And as we know, TV's not necessarily real. I mean, there's a lot of good ones around, you know, but True Detective, the original series, if you've seen it.
So good.
What struck me about that is the relationship between those two detectives is almost spot on, you know. Certainly that original series, it gave a really good insight into how detectives work together and that, different personalities.
That was Matthew McConaughey, correct?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
That performance was mesmerizing, and I agree with you. By the second one, I'm like, something just felt, I don't know what it was because I'm not a detective, but something didn't, the era of authenticity wasn't quite what I had expected.
Yeah, it was McConaughey and I think Woody Harrelson.
Oh, the other what a great 1-2 punch, huh?
Oh, they were fantastic, yeah. That it gave a great indication of, you know, how detectives think, and apart from being a great story, you know, but it's that most detective stuff is not secret, you know. There's plenty of people that would help you if you're a writer, that's for sure.
Sure. I am mesmerized. My wife and I gobble up British television for some reason. We love the detective. And what is it? They're called, is it DCI or?
In the UK, they're detectives, but they're detective constables or detective inspectors or detective sergeants.
Detective inspector.
It's a little bit different. When I was listening to Frank the other day too, I think he mentioned this as well. Like in the US, I think in most states, detective is a rank. So ranking, like if you think of the military, you've got, you know, ranks that go up. Detective is a rank in here, and I don't think in the UK it's a rank. It's not a rank here. It's just a designation. So you can be a detective constable, you can be a detective inspector, you can be a detective superintendent, you know.
Oh, so
The latter parts are the ranks here.
So let's go to your book that you're, we'll circle back to Bordertown, but what are you working on? Where is Bo? Can you, you got a pretty good idea where Bo is in the very near future? And when, will that release?
Well, you know, I'm working, my aim this year, one of my resolutions, of course, we all have, is to get it written and out this year.
Sure.
Not sure whether that'll happen. Look, Bo has, he's left Bordertown. He's been transferred to another little mining town. It's an opal mining town. If you know anything about opal mining.
I don't.
It's underground mining, deep underground. So they dig these massive holes that go underground. So he gets transferred to a little place called Lightning Ridge, which looks like the moon. So you walk into the place and there's just tens of thousands of holes in the ground. They're all leased by people, you know, chasing opal. I don't like opal, but and the next story is a bit of a murder mystery, which is, I guess, Bordertown's more of a procedural.
Mm-hmm.
This next story is more of a murder suspense mystery than Bordertown.
Nice.
So he'll get into all sorts of trouble, no doubt, again, and there's a bit of a murder happening there which he has to solve. But I think it'll be a good story. It has a little bit more of a slant than the last one. I'm going to bring in some first-person point of view. So I'm mucking around with a few different writing techniques there. So.
That's a great question. Let's take a spot on that. Is first versus third, and which do you prefer? And do you do kind of the full bore third omniscient, or do you do
pretty well. I mean, that's how Bordertown's written. But there's an Australian author. I don't know whether you've heard of him. His name is Michael Rowbotham. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, check him out. He's a fantastic writer. He books. That big in the Australian market. They're actually massive in the US and Germany and England and places like that. But he sort of, I read a few of his things and he's mixing first person point of view with third as well. And it works really well to give those different, you know, perspectives on the story as it goes through.
In The Poser, I combine them two. When Detective Norelli is in the story, it's first, and then otherwise it's omniscient third. That way,
okay.
I like to be inside of her head when she's in the scene, but then I'm kind of global 30,000 feet above in the rest of it. And it so far it works for me. And
yeah, I think anything can work, Dave. You know, like I remember a year or two ago reading Catherine Kepner's You, which you may have read, and that's written in, what do they call it, the second person? Oh, it was, you almost get a headache reading it at the start, but then as you go through it, it's like, wow, this really works, and it's written so out there, you know?
Well, and the title is great because second person is you. you went to the party. Right. You found yourself. Yeah. The only book I can think of that I read that was in the second person was Bright Lights, Big City, I believe it was.
Yeah.
This was decades ago. And it was a little like, that's interesting. But
Yeah. It was very interesting. But it worked. I mean, obviously, that was a pretty big novel. And it now became a movie.
Oh, sure. Love that movie.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of which, we're going to do two things here. On last week's show, I had my sister on, and she is not only a doctor, meaning of a PhD, but she's my editor. And I asked her what is on her nightstand. And I'm chuckling to myself because most of us have a book or two, and she has a stack of eight. I always like to ask this, what's on your nightstand now? What are you reading when you're not daydreaming of Bo?
good question, because I've got a stack as well.
Yeah.
Look, I like to switch a little bit between fiction and nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I do like reading things. I've just read one by a detective who got the sack in the department I used to work. It was a good story. I'm reading something called Shantaram. Now, you may never have heard of this, and it's more of a literary novel. Shantaram, Shantaram.
Okay.
It's by a fellow by the name of David Gregory Roberts. Now, quick story, David Roberts was incarcerated or was sentenced to 19 years in a Melbourne jail for armed robbery offences. He escaped to India. It's actually, that's the true story, and that's the story in this book as well.
Wow.
Where he joined the mafia and set up a healthcare clinic. It was like all sorts of stuff. So the book is set in India. It is, hold on to your seat, 220,000 words.
What?
Yep, almost 1,000 pages. So you won't be reading that in a night, but it's a fascinating read. He only ever wrote one book, that guy. You know, again, I like to read the odd biography. I'm reading one, the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. I'm reading her biography. Of course, I've got Michael Connelly's new one sitting there.
You're a big Connelly fan, right?
Oh, massive.
Yeah.
I saw recently, I think Bosch's, the TV series is finishing, is it?
Wrapping, right? Yeah, it is wrapped, yeah.
Mm, it was a good series.
It was super, super good.
Titus Welliver was just perfect.
He'll always be known as Bosch, but my other favorite role that I ever played was in a movie called The Town with John Hamm.
Yeah, okay.
Which I loved. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Heist movie?
I did. Got some. Yeah.
I love heist movies. That's what's on your nightstand, and we know what's on your top of your journal and what you're working on next. So let's talk about things, because so many of my listeners, it isn't all about writing. It's about the creative spirit and the creative energy. How are you feeling about the world as we know it and this? What in technology excites you? How do you feel about self-publishing versus standard traditional publishing?
Good question. Technology's, it's changed the world. I mean, COVID particularly. In my professional life, I'm Zooming every single day. I'm doing training on Zoom. I'm interviewing people on Zoom.
Oh, wow.
I think for authors too, it's really good because you can, however many hundred thousands and tens of thousands of miles away from each other.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, we're sitting opposite each other having a cup of coffee and having a yarn.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic for authors to connect with people, especially when they're doing their research.
Yeah.
You've got the Google Maps, which are so, you can go to a country without going there these days. Yes, you don't get the feeling and the soul emotion to it, but you can do a hell of a lot of research. It's still always good to go where you're going to write your book, of course. But I think that sort of stuff has opened the world up for everybody, but authors particularly.
I was telling my sister last week on the show that I'm a fanatic for Google flyovers. If you work your mouse right, you can actually fly in and around cities. And so I'm forever doing that, which I just love when it comes to research.
Yeah.
But like, for instance, that's how I got to know. I mean, I've got Sydney downtown pretty well fixed in my brain. I mean, if I landed at Sydney International Airport, I would be able to, outside of the fact that I don't want to drive because it's on the left side and I'm just, but I got that downtown pad. I know where all the great hotels are. I'm a big reviewer and I love to read reviews. So, and part of my research has to do with where this particular person is. And so I know all the great hotels to stay in. And but you're right. The technology right at our fingertips is crazy.
Oh, it's great. It's opened up a whole new world. You know, like, as I said, professionally, I can do most of what I need to do sitting in front of a computer now. And, yeah, everybody's not sure over there, but a lot of people are still working from home here. Mm-hmm. We don't have the COVID problems either that you do in the US. We've largely got it under control. So, but even though we had lockdowns and people were working from home, a lot of them still are. So the way people work has changed now, and organisations particularly are realising that, you know, people don't have to necessarily come and sit in an office to work.
You very graciously sent me a sample of your audiobook, and this has to do with technology. And I'd love to play this. Are you cool with that?
And I might add, you, of course, gave me your own sample of that, which I still have, and I only listened to yesterday, which was fantastic, by the way. I would have, frankly, it was better than the one that I got. But, you know, I don't think the accents were quite there. And
well, two things. First of all, thank you for that compliment. I spent 25 plus years in radio and 30 years in voiceover. So I hope I have some kind of a talent in there, that arena.
Yeah.
However, I cannot do an Australian accent as much as I love that accent. I listen to it and I try to mimic it, but I massacre it each time. But let's take a listen.
Yeah.
Hey, Walloper, a deep voice rang out. More laughter, mixed with the pig-like snorting. Bo stopped and turned back towards the gang of hicks. He hadn't heard that term for years, the last time being when his dad was in the job in the 60s. It's what Queenslanders affectionately name their police members. But how did they know he was a cop? Was it the blue police shirts hanging in the rear window of his car? Or was it that they just knew? People in small communities knew everything. Everyone talked, everyone gossiped, and everyone knew each other's business. He didn't say anything. He stood firm and held his hand up to his ear. Were they talking to him? He looked around. Of course they were, you idiot. The group laughed and grunted between themselves. The firearm blasted again, this time down the highway where he'd come from. He saw the rifle swing in an arc in his direction, but he didn't move. He didn't want to lose face. He was a detective, a constable, first class. What did these small town hicks think they were doing? The standoff went on for what seemed like minutes, but he'd only counted a few breaths of the cool air. Neither side flinched, although Bo could hear his own heartbeat amongst the millions of cicadas.
I love that. Boy. Border Town by Gregory James. We're back on Naked Monday. And who is the narrator?
Yeah, his name is Les Horowitz, and he's a, you know, he's a professional narrator from Melbourne.
Okay.
Yeah, look, very good. He's really great. It's even funny listening to that. Even he got some of the pronunciations wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, it differs to between states, like you know,
sure.
Someone from Texas is different to someone from New York. They've got little nuances in their accents. It's the same over here too. I couldn't get Russell Crowe to do it, unfortunately. He wasn't available. But
you probably saved a little money too, having him versus Russell Crowe.
I think so. Yes. I think
I'm amazed at the amount of Australian actors who are working in the States. Speaking of audio, because I want to talk about technology. Do you find that audio has worked well for you? Did it? Did you have any success with the audiobook?
Not really, Dave. Yeah. No, but again, that's my fault. I mean, you know, if you're a self-published author, you've got to spend, you know, there's a lot of time promoting yourself, the story and your book. I've had a difficult year personally and business-wise where I couldn't give the time I needed to or wanted to that. But, you know, it's a new year, 2021, new year. So it's out there. My audio book is out there on all platforms. It's not tearing up the charts at all, but who knows?
I will give you a little bit of encouragement. You're familiar with BookBub, of course, right?
Yes.
Okay. I spent some money on BookBub advertising The Poser and did really quite well. But BookBub, owns Chirp. Chirp is to their audio what Audible is to Amazon's Kindle.
Okay.
So if you research Chirp, like the bird, bird chirping, I put a few dollars on that and it did really well. Now, what I will encourage you to do is drop that price down to basement level. Mm. I mean, I literally, when I premiered the audiobook of The Poser, which I did, voiced rather, I think I came out of the gate at 99 cents or $1.99.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know what it takes, I think it took me probably 3 weeks to record that thing. And I did some sound design as well. So that adds another week or two. And it was, you know, for 99 cents or $2, it's worth it. You know, even if you're half-assed interested in it, it's a great little ride.
Yeah, okay.
And I would say this, I was reading about this as I was preparing for today's show, according to a company, Written Word Media, and they helped me, they're not endorsing this mention, but they did help me promote the book. They have an article, came out first of the year, entitled The Top 10 Publishing Trends Every Author Needs to Know in 2021, and listed as number four, more platforms are fighting for audio supremacy. And it goes on to quote Jane Friedman. I'm a big fan of Jane Friedman. I've learned a lot of stuff from her. And she has a service called the Hot Sheet. And she says that competition is heating up between Audible, Spotify, and Apple as they're taking steps to become a central hub for audio entertainment and storytelling. And she expects to see growth over the next decade and will likely surpass ebook sales in a couple of years.
Right. Wow.
What I want to leave you with is make sure as you're creating Bo's next adventure, bring him back, bring your Lee back and have him be prepared to do audiobook too and drop that price. Also, are you familiar with Joanna Penn of the Creative Pen? Okay.
Yes, I am. She's very good. Lots of really good resources.
She's a great author. She's a great blogger. I've learned more stuff from her, and she has such a big spirit and giving heart. I've heard her speak at a lot of different conferences, and she's just so gracious. But she says that she's seen a big expansion in the international market. Matter of fact, with opportunities with subscription services like Storytel and perhaps Spotify, but even Google Play is getting into the business with narrations by AI. So artificial intelligence will be doing audiobook narrations in the future.
Mm, wow. Okay.
Putting me up.
That'll be interesting with the Australian accent.
That's true. I would suppose that they would do AI based in Australia. Well, you'd have to. You'd just program it with that accent, right?
Mm-hmm, I guess so.
Yeah. Let's go back to writing and what is, because I see this for you. I think you're great talent. I know you have the desire and the want for it. Suppose tomorrow someone cuts you a check for a big advance and you can take the rest of 2021, your kids are taken care of, your bills are paid, and you get to write. What is that thing? What is that part of creating? What is that thing, that magic that gets you out of bed in the morning and says, this is it, and I'm ready to roll? So that's a two-part question. That and, you know, how would you spend your time? What would be the magic and the sequence that you would do?
Good question. I mean, I don't have a pattern for writing. I know some people have, you know, certain patterns. They write in the morning or the afternoon or night. I'll just write when it feels right. I take a long time to get into the zone of writing, and that's probably my biggest downfall. I will take maybe even sometimes an hour to get into that headspace where I can start punching out. Particularly, I'm talking about working on a first draft.
Sure.
I think, if I had the rest of the year, I'd be able to probably punch out another couple of books, I reckon. If that's all you did and that's all you were focusing on, it'd be good. I've got for Bo Campbell, my character, I've got about 6 or 8 books that I want to take him through.
Nice.
And they're all of them based on places I've worked, people I've worked with, things I've done, as is Bordertown, the inciting incident in Bordertown is a real thing.
Sure.
And the rest of it's obviously fairly highly exaggerated. I'll say to people, you can't write a real detective story in a fiction novel because no one would read it. Detective goes in, has a cup of coffee, sits down at his desk, does 3 hours paperwork. That's not exciting.
Right.
So yeah, look, if I had that time, I'd do a lot of reading, a lot of writing. I get inspiration from other authors like yourself. That is my biggest inspiration. People like you, reading books. I have a real interest in Australian authors and Australian crime authors, and there's lots of them around too. So, if I could make a full-time thing out of this, I would, David. You know,
I would love to give you a piece of encouragement if I could, and I try to do this with people just, and if you can take it or leave it, of course, but I am very fortunate to be able to write full-time because the way I've planned my life, and my wife has a really great job, et cetera. I sit down I'm up at 5 o'clock every single day, and I'm sitting down at my desk pretty much between 5:15, 5:30 in the morning, and I try my best not to be interrupted until noon. So that is the highest part of my focus. And I don't sit and wait for anything to come to me. What I do is I just simply take what I wrote the day before. I reread it, maybe tweak with a little bit, but kind of get my ramp up and then and aim for the next writing. And my personal goal is no less than 1,500. And I kind of aim for about 3,000. And I figure anywhere between 1,500 and 3,000 is good. A lot of days I will go, I will break for lunch, and then I'll write till 3 or 4 in the afternoon, especially if I'm on a roll or I'm doing a lot of research. But I really do say to myself, you know, put your ass in the chair and show up, and you're 50% there.
Mm, that's great advice, and it's true. I guess I work pretty much the same, you know. I reread what I wrote the day before. If I'm on that role, and then that's fantastic advice. You've just got to sit down and do it, don't you?
You know, there's no magic trick. There's no magic formula. I do read a lot about formula, like Save the Cat, and and The Story Grid by Sean Coyne, and Dialogue by Robert McKee, books like that. And so I'm always trying to just hone the craft of the mechanics. But I don't get too wicky-wacky, to borrow my own phrase, about, is this believable, or is that too far out there, or has somebody done that before? Because, and I did this just yesterday, I wrote this great scene, I was really psyched about it, and when I went back to it this morning, I went, okay, that's not bad. And I trimmed about a third of it, I just kind of got rid of it because it was superfluous, but it jettisoned my brain into something I had not thought about, and a real plot point and a pivot in the story that actually ended up being better. But I find if I do that every single day, part of it is doing it every day, sticking with it, whether, you know, rain or shine, and just, even if I show up one day and I've got a headache, or I'm not really, you know, it's not sunny or whatever bullshits, you know, I want to tell myself, I still sit down and go, well, do something. If you're not feeling the magic, at least do some research, you know, like, for instance, a gun. Well, let's research a 1911 versus I have a 9mm Glock, so I know I know that. So I don't know, a 1911, let's do that. Point being, I think consistency, a lot of the key.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You should always be doing, you know, if you want to write, you should be doing something. Even if it's not, I guess, writing what you are writing at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be a blog post that can help you too. It
sure.
Reading one of your favorite authors. And, you know, because I know I take inspiration from reading certain authors. I've mentioned a few, Michael Robotham, our friend Don Winslow, of course, and people like that. You know, just reading their stuff gives me inspiration to want to write better.
Don Winslow owes me a coffee as many times as I mentioned his name. Have you picked up his compilation of short stories, Broken?
No, I haven't.
Dude.
No.
This is 6 stories in here. Just a tasty little morsel of greatness. And I bring him up because we're big fans of his. And he has such a fantastic style. I think I was talking to him, or did I hear him on CBS with Jeff Glore talking about, is that his thing was he just kept doing it. We had a conversation once at a book signing. I said, what's your secret? He goes, just keep writing. And he said, do you love it? I said, I really quite love it more than about anything. He goes, just keep doing it. And if you love it and you keep perfecting honing your craft, success will come to you, which makes me think of Jeff Daniels. Big fan of Jeff Daniels, the actor, and he was on a show, and they were asking him his secret to success, and he goes, I never thought I'd be an overnight success at 62. You know, it took me this long to really kind of come into my own and really hit the groove. And I say all of that to say, we don't know when that time will come when opportunity and preparation meet, and you just got to keep hitting it, don't you?
You do. And reminds me of a quote, David, I think it might be Adrian McKenty that it comes from, that said, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. I didn't know that was Adrian. He's probably just quoting whoever said it, but and say it again.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And the way that relates to writers is that, and I fall into this trap as well, as I try to write this perfect stuff. You know, I try to sit down and make it perfect. And any good writer will tell you, don't do that. Just write it. It's good. Make it perfect later.
You know, I think that's a great, I'm not sure Adrian came up with that, but I certainly respect the guy. I mean, did you read The Chain, by the way?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic.
Holy shit, that was good. I think it's a misnomer. I think it's a joke to expect perfection. First of all, what in life is perfect? Mm-hmm. Secondly, and Gregory, I tell myself this every day. I'm like, because we take it so seriously, it is just a story. It is just a piece of fiction. We are just burning through time on Earth. Yeah. We just want a diversion. We just want to be entertained. We want to escape. And if it's good and well-written, and P.S., make sure you have a good editor, and it's edited, and you have a good book cover, and it's a couple of books, enjoy the ride.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, not everyone's going to like your book, are they? That's the thing too, you know, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but literature and reading for me is like music. Some people like country music. Some people like rock music. Some people like heavy metal. You know what? Doesn't mean any of it's bad. It's just what people like. So I don't take any offense to people saying they didn't like it. My book, you know, or they did, most people. Thankfully, you know, pretty well everybody said they do like it, but there's the occasional one that says, oh, no, it didn't do it. Yeah, it's good.
Well, dude, this has been absolutely magic. I try to keep it as close to an hour as possible. Like I said, again, I love your country. It's so beautiful. And I'm only studying, you know, basically New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten into South Australia, Northern Territory, or Western Australia, like out Perth. Mm-hmm. But I would love one day to come there and you be my
person. I would love that. I would do that, and I would love that.
I have been talking to my wife. I said, babe, I know it'll take us a day and a half to get there, but like, I am just mesmerized with Australia. And I'll tell you something else. And the Great Barrier Reef, I never really fully appreciated what it was and the amount of space that it covers. I always thought, oh, because I think of Florida, oh, there's a little reef there. Oh, there's a couple of reefs. No, it goes from the top of Cairns. Okay, so it's
Cairns,
Cairns. So north of Cairns and then down to Mackay, almost Rockhampton. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Have you been out there and seen all that?
Oh, yeah. I was only up there in the Whitsundays a couple of months ago off Cairns. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot. I mean, like any country, every country's got their beautiful spots. But, you know, if you were to come here, I would want to show you some of the real Australia too.
Yeah.
You know, as an example, I turned 50 recently and I...
Congrats.
My partner took me to the Northern Territory. I'd never been to the Northern Territory. So the Northern Territory, there's nothing. It's the middle of Australia, but what is in the middle, which everybody knows about, is this big red rock called Uluru. You know, you can see it from space and all that sort of thing. And it was so good to go and see. But you go out to a place like that, there's just red dirt and nothing. It's fascinating. It's 14 kilometres round the base of it, and it's a rock. And they think it's kilometres deep as well.
Wow. Fascinating.
They're the sort of things, you know. You know, everyone knows the Opera House, the Sydney Harbour Bridge, Ayers Rock. They're all great, but it's good to get out and see the real Australia as well.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to see all of it. And the what I have researched in surfing is just, you have, I think, on the top 10 spots in the world to surf, Australia has something like, and I'm not going to bore you with finding out where it, I've got it in notes, but like four of the top 10, maybe five of the top 10 in the world. Yeah. Between Perth and Adelaide and then Brisbane and Gold Coast. I mean, it's just astonishing. And I'm expecting next time we talk for you to have mastered surfing.
Well, I can paddleboard. That's about it. No, not surfing. But there's, you know, there's a massive surfing culture here. And I live north of Brisbane.
Okay. So
at the Gold Coast, that's south of Brisbane. I live north of Brisbane on a place called the Sunshine Coast. It's a massive surfing culture here and really great beaches. And
well, Gregory, I am going to be reaching out to you if you're good with that. With I might be sharing notes about surfing and or detective work.
The good thing about authors, David, is that we help each other.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what time, day or night, I'm happy to help any author, you particularly.
Well, thank you.
Anything I can do for you, any of your listeners that want help or advice on being a detective or Australia, they're my two go-tos, I guess. You know, I'm happy to help anytime.
You are quite a gentleman, and it's the website is gregoryjames.com, and the book is Border Town, and I'm looking forward to see what Bo is up to next. And next time we get together, we'll pop open a couple of cold ones.
Oh, I hope so.
Gregory James, author of Border Town, thank you so much again for being on Naked Monday.
Oh, you're welcome, David. Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll do this again, shall we?
I hope so. Maybe in person.
That would be delightful.
Post our COVID world.
Yes. Cheers to that. All right, brother.
Cheers, mate.